You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
There have been rapid developments in Eastern Europe this week, with Putin declaring two Eastern Ukrainian regions independent from Ukraine. Following this, Russian troops entered Eastern Ukraine on a supposed peacekeeping mission. Yet Putin has repeatedly denied he is invading Ukraine, despite Western intelligence claiming otherwise. This morning, I spoke to Associate Professor Jim Headley about the conflict. Jim is an expert on Russian foreign policy at the University of Otago and started by explaining the conflict in Eastern Europe.
Okay, so it goes back really to 2014 when we had the Maidan revolution in Ukraine and Ukraine orientating towards the EU and encouraged by Putin. Two areas in the east with kind of predominantly Russian-speaking population broke away. There was a war which then kind of led to a ceasefire 2015. And since then, really, they've been sort of breakaway republics, not recognized, but kind of supported by Russia. And then recently, Putin's been kind of ratcheting up the rhetoric around the wider context of Ukraine's Western orientation and potential membership of NATO. And in this context, has now made this dramatic move of actually kind of recognizing those republics as independent.
And are concerns that Russia is using the Eastern Ukraine conflict as a pretext to invade valid?
I think you could say it's an invasion already. And I think that's the way the Western governments are responding to it, because, of course, the rest of the world recognizes Ukraine's territorial integrity, including sovereignty over those two eastern regions. So Russia sending in troops basically does already kind of really encapsulate an invasion. Now, as you said, Putin's kind of dressing up as peacekeeping, but I mean, that's just kind of rhetoric as a mask for this. But the question of whether it sort of acts as a prelude for kind of wider invasion, I still think it would be very much against Russia's interest to invade the whole of Ukraine, and therefore unlikely. But I do think, and I watched carefully Putin's address to the nation yesterday where he announced this, and I do really feel that he these days is very unpredictable in a way that he didn't used to be. There seems to be some sort of personal angst about it. He's kind of been insulted by Western actions and what's going on in Ukraine. I think more likely, and this is sort of there in the balance these days, is so the areas which had sort of broken away and were controlled by separatists, and which Russia has now sent its troops into and recognized, are only part of the wider regions of Lugansk and Donetsk before the conflict there. So there's a kind of wider region, and there's a kind of ceasefire line sort of dividing that region. And Putin's already said that he's recognized those breakaway ones within the whole area. So what that might mean is that Russian troops may actually try to kind of support separatists in trying to reclaim all of that region, which also may be strategically important in some way. And that, again, very much would mean a very clear invasion of Ukraine, because it's across the kind of ceasefire line.
Why is Ukrainian sovereignty and territorial integrity so important?
Well, it really is the foundation of the United Nations system, the idea that it is made up of sovereign states that do enjoy the right to territorial integrity. And when the Soviet Union broke up, it broke up into 15 independent republics, which were the kind of former Union republics, and they each recognized each other in their existing borders. If you begin to kind of tinker with that, and particularly by force, then you get back to the kind of conflicts that we saw in the 19th century and leading up to the First and then Second World War. So it's kind of seen as the foundation.
If left unchecked, what are the potential consequences in Russia and Ukraine and globally?
Well, I think there is, for a start, globally, that kind of implication, you know, if Russia can be seen to get away with using force to kind of change the existing status quo, then they might encourage states like China to do it. The use of force rather than negotiation or accepting international law. The other concern is that this is a prelude for Russia doing this elsewhere in the former Soviet Union, maybe into the Baltic states. Again, I think this is unlikely. I think Ukraine kind of occupies a special place in Russian nationalist thought, but it seems particularly in Putin's thought. It's strategically important, but again, it's the question of the principle of it. And I think there's a concern that he's sort of doing this by this sort of salami slicing tactics. You know, he did it with Crimea. He's kind of recognized those breakaway ones from Georgia. Now these ones from the other part of Ukraine. Gradually, you know, chipping away at the territories of neighboring states, and that somewhere a line needs to be drawn.
I also spoke with Professor Robert Aysen, a strategic studies professor at Victoria University of Wellington. We discussed what the conflict means for Aotearoa and what steps we can take to de-escalate the situation. Now, it could be easy from our little corner of the world to simply say, why does this matter? But what ramifications does this conflict have for New Zealand?
I think, Christina, there are quite a few. I mean, if the conflict really escalates, obviously there are humanitarian implications. You know, those are the sorts of issues that, for a country that like New Zealand that does emphasise human rights, that's important. But I think one of the real issues here is what Putin is doing is he's trying to change international boundaries through the use of force. And you see that is partly why the Foreign Minister, Mahuta, and other leading figures have responded so quickly to Putin's announcement about recognising those breakaway parts of eastern Ukraine, because that really is not in keeping with international law, and particularly the use of force to try to achieve that. That's even worse.
Jacinda Ardern has signalled she'll look to implement a travel ban. How effective would this be?
So at the moment, obviously, there's not an awful lot of people who are coming into New Zealand from overseas in any case. But I think what a travel ban does is that it signals New Zealand's unity with other partners in trying to restrict access for officials and possibly parliamentarians, parts of the official system in Russia, who might want to have the freedom to move around. But I don't think that New Zealand would want to be in a position where we say, well, we're going to allow free movement for officials who are involved in this decision making. But one of the reasons that New Zealand emphasises this is because we don't have the autonomous capacity to level the types of sanctions that a number of our partners are going to be levelling. And so we tend to focus on things like almost ad hoc measures that you can do, and travel restrictions are part of that.
The National Party has called for legislation to allow New Zealand to impose sanctions outside of United Nations approval. Is this a valid strategy?
To de-escalate the situation, I mean, a number of countries seek to use sanctions as an alternative to the use of force, for example. So they're looking for something stronger than a diplomatic protest, which is coming anyway. They're looking for something in between that, and clearly there isn't going to be a forceful reaction, a violent reaction if Russia does mount a major invasion of Ukraine. That's largely been ruled out. For a range of good reasons, including the fact that Ukraine's not a member of NATO. But the sanctions are somewhere in between diplomatic protests and the use of force. And I do think there are times when New Zealand does want to have the capacity. You want officials in the foreign ministry to be able to say, well, look, ministers, here's a range of possibilities for New Zealand response. And one of those is to mount autonomous sanctions. And it's not just about this particular case. Australia, for example, has relatively new sanctions legislation in addition to its original one from 2011. And at the moment, most of the ad hoc things that New Zealand can do are really just in terms of the official relationship with Russia. So I think that is you don't want to be in a position where, as a government, you are telling officials that there are a range of options that we actually rule out that we don't ever want to be able to undertake. You just don't know. So I think we are handicapping ourselves in a way here, and I think that's unnecessary. So I think it would be a good idea to introduce that legislation and to pass it. And if the Greens are opposed to it, which they've tended to be very strongly, then clearly the National Party would support it. So I think it would be a good moment for kind of a cross-partisan approach. And I'm sure that legislation would make a bit of a difference to the types of options that future governments in New Zealand could have.
That was University of Otago Associate Professor Jim Headley and Victoria University Professor Robert Aysen talking about the Russian-Ukrainian crisis and how New Zealand might get involved.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.